Hello, and welcome to date, the most magical episode of the Cord Cotter podcast. You know I had to do it.
Couldn't wait.
I had to do it. I've been sitting on it the whole time we've been getting ready. Okay. It's Mick Jost here, contributing writer for Cinema Blend, along with editor Adrian Jones.
Woo!
And with us today is the vice president of content at Gateway Blend and resident Harry Potter nerd. That's self-professed. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get in trouble. Kelly West.
Yay!
Yay!
Wait,
what's up, Kelly?
I got one. Expecto podcastum.
Ooh. Yeah.
Oh, man.
That's pretty good. So today's topic, we're going to talk about how you can stream all 8 Harry Potter movies on HBO. That is a thing you can currently do. We're going to be analyzing the favorites of what we love about the series and discussing what's next in the Harry Potter universe. But before we get over to all that, Adrian, you got some streaming news for us.
That is true. Both are Hulu items, and I don't know how this came about. I guess somebody's watching it, but Runaways has been renewed at Hulu.
Don't be like that.
Okay, listen, contrary to what you may think, if you listen to our podcast where we actually discuss the show, I'm not upset about this news. I just don't get it. Okay? Mick, you liked the show a lot better than I did.
Yeah.
Have you kept watching season one? And are you going to be back for season two?
Oh, yeah. I'm for sure going to be back for season two. Honestly, I think the biggest disservice we did to Runaways was when we did the episode where we did, I felt like things really picked up and addressed some of the issues we addressed in the podcast, to where if I could have done it again, I would have waited until after the season. They got me hooked is all I can say. And you got to get back into it.
So basically the first season is done now, and you think all the problems we had with what we had seen up until the point when we did the podcast, that stuff has been taken care of, basically. You think it's a better show now than it was.
It's a better show. I'm not gonna sit here and say it's not problematic. It's still very teen drama-y and not the caliber of maybe a Netflix Marvel show, but it is good enough to watch, and I enjoy that for what it is.
Okay, well, it sounds like season two is going to be hitting the service sometime in late 2018, so we don't have that much longer to wait until the new batch of episodes come around. In other Hulu news, now this is something I'm a lot more excited about. Hulu has decided to reboot the classic 90s cartoon Animaniacs, and that's unfortunately not coming to the service until 2020, but the geniuses at Hulu have decided to do us a great service. And to help us with that wait time, they have decided to add to the streaming service the original show, Animaniacs, as well as Pinky and the Brain, Pinky Elmira and the Brain, and Tiny Toons Adventures. Some shows that I was crazy for in the 90s. Are you guys as excited about this as I am? Because I cannot wait to start watching these shows. And they're already up on the service.
What do you think, Kelly? I'll let you go. You haven't said anything yet.
I was a very big Tiny Toons fan.
Yes.
But in my experience, some of the things that I loved when I was a kid just are better left in my heart and memory.
Yeah. I get that.
In reality, so I would probably check out some Tiny Toons, but I don't see myself being that version of myself that could watch that nonstop and never get tired of it.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Obviously, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and be like, I'm on the same maturity level as Kelly. She's a very distinguished individual. So maybe I'm a little bit more immature, but I will say for what it's worth, Animaniacs, maybe not so much Tiny Toon Adventures, was a show that was enjoyed by a lot of adults back in its run due to the clever writing and such, the pop culture references. And when I watched it back when it was on Netflix, I don't know how long back it was, but I found myself laughing just as much as like when I was a kid and I didn't understand some of the random references they were making.
See, and I didn't really watch Animaniacs when I was a kid. So now I think I would watch that now more out of curiosity because I never really got into it.
Yeah. Now, I admit, I tried to rewatch Animaniacs a few years ago and just couldn't do it. Kelly, like you were saying, it was just something that seemed like it was better left, like in my childhood. But I did rewatch Pinky and the Brain a few years ago, and I was totally still into that. So I've already gone through my Hulu feed and added all this stuff to my watch list, so I will be watching this stuff at some point.
Obviously, Tiny Toons still has some adult appeal, because isn't season 2 of Atlanta based on a Tiny Toons made-for-TV movie?
Yeah. Yeah, they did say that.
They're like, there's a string of episodes that's going to be based on a Tiny Toons movie. Just the general concept, that you're not going to see, like, Plucky Duck or anything running around on the show.
Yeah, but I'm looking forward to getting into all those.
I already have, by the way, to perfectly segue into our weekly Q segment. I'll go first. I've been watching Tiny Toons. I can't say it's on the same level as Animaniacs, as I remember, but I'm a big fan of Buster Bunny. He's one of my favorite,
What about Babs and Elmira Duff?
Yeah, I mean, that's all fine. For me, it's all about Hamilton, Plucky, Buster, and sometimes Montana Max. I had a big gap teeth when I was a younger kid, so I kind of looked like Montana Max, but that's not, I didn't necessarily take that as a good thing because he's kind of a bad dude. But I'm enjoying it so far. I love the, I forgot all about like the stuff like water go down the hole.
Oh, like, yeah, I remember that.
Plucky flushes the toilet and stuff like that. Yeah. All that's just bringing so much nostalgia. I couldn't love it any more than I am currently. So I'm really hoping you guys watch it and tell me I'm not crazy and that it is actually just as good.
Well, now, wait a minute. You are crazy, but that doesn't mean it's not still good.
Nope. It's validation. What have you been watching, Adrian?
I have been watching Lovesick on Netflix. There are, yeah, I know, there are currently 3 seasons of this British romantic comedy on Netflix, and it was originally called, and this is why I feel like we talked about this show a few episodes ago.
Because the January episode.
Yeah, the third season just hit the service. It was originally called, just one of the worst titles, it was called Scrotal Recall, okay? Because it focuses on a guy named Dylan as he goes around to all his former girlfriends to tell them that he's got an STD and they need to get checked. I know. It's not like
it's called Scrotal Recall.
Yeah. It's not a great, it's a really weird sort of premise, but it's a surprisingly sweet, funny show. Most of the episodes take place mostly in flashback, as you see why those relationships broke up, and he's had a lot of them. But they tend not to last for more than a few months. And so it's not just about how those relationships broke up. It's about how he has gotten together with his friends and how they deal with their romantic relationships and how they all kind of mixed together as friends. It's just a really good show. And I have to tell you, I watched the first 2 or 3 episodes probably back in August or something like that. And then just kind of got out of the habit of it and hadn't gone back to it. And I went back to it over the weekend, got through the beginning of the second season. And season 2, episode 1 is one of the funniest things I've seen recently. It was just a really weirdly funny episode. And I think you guys should really check it out. It's a really good show.
Absolutely. That one's on Netflix. Kelly, what are you watching?
I finished up The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel right before the Golden Globes aired. Yeah, because I really, when I knew that it was nominated, I was like, I got to finish that. I loved it. It's a great first season, totally deserving of its awards and critical acclaim. Just lovely. Very fun.
Yeah, it's a good show.
Awesome. Well, now that we got that all out of the way, we can move on to the important stuff. The meat and potatoes of the discussion, Harry Potter. And I'm really excited for this episode in particular because we have 2 people on very opposite ends of the spectrum. We have Kelly.
Not necessarily.
Hang on. let me explain. We have Kelly, who is a big Harry Potter fan. She's read the books. She's watched the films. She has tattoos on her body that signify her love of Harry Potter. And we have Adrian, who only recently just watched the films for the first time.
Yeah, this weekend. And through last night was when I finished the series. Never read the books.
So Kelly, let's go into your Harry Potter fandom. Let's talk about like how deep that runs. What would you say, how would you prove to someone that you are like one of the bigger Harry Potter fans out there?
And so how did you get into it?
I feel like, or I can tell you that story, but in a second. But just to illustrate, I guess, the level of fanaticism that I experience is that it actually causes an emotional reaction to me that Adrian had her first experience with the story through the movies. That, like, I would only ever want someone to read the books. I just feel like the movies are going to spoil you, and the books are just amazing. It's just such a wonderful series from beginning to end. And the films have their qualities and have a lot of things about them that I like, but in mm-hmm. terms of experiencing the story, the books are the only way to experience the story. So that's my stance on that. But I do like the movies, just to be clear.
Right. But you make a valid point in the fact that the films and books, there's a lot of stuff that goes in between the two that remains unspoken. Things that you may be completely oblivious to, Adrian, as we're having this discussion today. For sure. I remember talking to you, Adrian, before we started, and it did not seem like things were going well for you when I first checked in on how your Harry Potter quest was going.
Because I was still in the first part of the series. Like, I was still in the midst of those first four movies, and I just didn't really feel that connected to it. You know, the performances were good for what they were, but I wasn't feeling it. Like, it wasn't setting my heart on fire.
But then the next batch, the final four films, that's what did it in for you?
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't until the fifth movie where I started to really feel connected to what was happening.
Kelly, do you feel like, I want to ask you, since you're kind of you're a book lover first, I would imagine, but you have love for the films as well. Do you feel like one particular part of the series in the film universe is stronger than the rest? Do you feel like Adrian did that the latter films are better than the original ones? Do you like it all the way through? How do you feel about it?
Gosh, that's a complicated question. It's interesting to me that Adrienne says that she felt that turning point in the fifth movie, because it's not a hugely popular opinion, but I actually mm-hmm. really like Order of the Phoenix as a film. More so, I wouldn't say that I like the movie better than the book, but in the scope of the series, that movie stands out for me as being one of the better movies. And I think the reason for that is because it takes the time to sort of highlight the connection that Harry has with his friends and with the people that he cares about, and how that's sort of at the heart of everything that's happening and why he's able to do the things that he does and why Voldemort constantly underestimates him. I feel like Order of the Phoenix really brings that out in a way that especially the four movies before it kind of glossed over. It didn't really take the time. With that said, I think that Prisoner of Azkaban was the turning point in the films in terms of taking it from what felt like more of a children's, you know, or kids movie to something a little bit more. And Alfonso Cuarón just does a beautiful job with Azkaban. So that one stands out as the best of the series for me. But it's not really, it's sort of an ups and downs thing, because then comes Goblet of Fire, which, you know, has its own set of issues. You know, so I guess it depends on what we're talking about. If we're talking about casting, you know, these movies did such a beautiful job in bringing out the talent of the actors while also kind of showcasing some of the better things about the characters that J.K. Rowling created.
Which brings me to my beef that I have with you, Adrian. I recently rewatched the first Harry Potter movie. And as someone who read the books as a child, I was around mm-hmm. the same age as Harry Potter throughout the whole run. So it was kind of one of those following it year-to-year deals for me.
Okay.
Well,
okay.
When it came out, at least. But it gave me that wave of nostalgia that even though it was a children's film, I didn't feel like it was a children's film. I felt like I was watching, like, a classic piece of cinema. The cinematography in that film is just so amazing.
Where it feels like it's, like, creating... For the first movie?
Yes! It was incredible! No. And I mean, it blows my mind that she feels that way. Kelly,
wait a minute.
You feel
so now, even now, you feel like it looked amazing.
Yes, absolutely.
Eh.
That forest scene where all the kids are with Hagrid and Fang and they're walking through the forest, you see them moving through the trees. I don't know. I think it holds a special place in my heart because that was the first time you were able to put, like, a physical face on the Harry Potter characters. You know, it wasn't anymore in your head. That was what they looked like from that point on for me.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, there's definitely a big deal that seeing the Hogwarts Express, you know, meeting the characters in person, seeing what, like, certain parts of the story were kind of, I wouldn't say supposed to look like, but what they could look like and what differed, you know, from your own imagination. And then there's, like, straight up differences and things that got taken out or whatever. But yeah, I was older when the first movie came out, so I think I don't have that sense of nostalgia that you do, Nick.
I get it. I get it. I understand. What I don't understand, and I feel like, Kelly, you would want some justification on this as well, is how Adrienne Jones lived X amount of years of her life and completely just sidestepped the entire Harry Potter craze. Like, how... You're a geeky person, Adrienne. I'm not trying to put you on blast here, but you have a ton of Funko Pop on your desk that signify you are a geeky person.
Yeah, this whole time have understood that it's something I should be into, considering the other types of movies and TV shows I like. But I just never got into it. To me, it was a children's book, so it didn't occur to me to read it. And when the movies started coming out, I thought those were children's movies, and it didn't occur to me to start watching them. And when the first one came on TV, like just regular TV, I think it was on ABC or something like that one night. And I'm like, okay, nothing else is on. Of course, this was years ago. I can, you know, I'll give this a shot. And the kids annoyed me almost immediately. And I got maybe 20 minutes into it. And I'm like, I can't do this anymore. And I never went back to them. That's what happened.
See, and I get it, because I had that reaction with the books when I first picked up the first book. And that was before the movies came out. So the first movie, this is dating me, okay? But like, I was fresh out of college. The books were out. The first three, maybe the fourth one had just come out. And I was fresh out of college. And I was like, all right, I want to see what the big deal is. They're making a movie out of this. So I want to, you know, I want to see what people are talking about. And so I bought the first book and I read the first chapter. And I had that reaction that Adrienne had, which is like, it's fine. But like, I'm not really sure what the mass appeal of it is. And so I put it down and I didn't pick it up for a year. Like I had kind of planned on sort of just abandoning it. And then for my own reasons, I decided that I needed an escape. I needed something that was not the reality that I was living in at the time. And so I started reading Harry Potter just to give my brain a rest. And I got completely sucked into it. And it took me, I think, to the third book to go from being like, okay, I'm enjoying this, and this is like exactly what my mind wanted, was some make-believe and some magic and a little bit of a break from everything that's going on in this world right now. But then, you know, the end of the third book comes and you get to that part where you start hearing about Harry's parents and the history and his friends and betrayal. And I'm starting to see a bigger story emerging. And for me, that's when I was like, oh, wow. Oh, okay. So this is more than just a kid at a wizarding school that someone keeps trying to kill him. There's actual unfinished business. There's a history here. And once I saw that and saw the scope, you know, or just a hint of it, I was totally hooked. And then from there, I was on board. I was all in a way that I don't think I'd ever been a fan of anything as much as I became a fan of that. You know, before then, I can't think of anything that I loved nearly as much as I ended up loving Harry Potter. And then it just became really fun, I think, to be a part of that as these books are coming out and as the movies are coming out. And I think that's where I hold, a place in my heart for the movies more than anything, is the anticipation. I mean, there were years between Goblet of Fire and Order of the Phoenix. When those books, that was a big gap. And people were desperate for that next book and so excited. And so for those years, people were online like talking and sharing theories and trying to figure things out and, you know, sharing rumors. And it was just a really fun time to be a Harry Potter fan, even if you weren't, a kid. Because here I was, I was in my, young adulthood, but I was still just super involved in obsessing, over that and being excited. And so it was a book coming out, or then there was another movie coming out, so there was a lot to really embrace during that time period.
Absolutely. So obviously big book fan, Kelly, have you read through multiple times? Have you gone through once and you just keep up on the lore so you're familiar with it?
I think I said this, that I've probably read the books more than I've seen the movies. I don't really tend to go back to the movies all that often. I did do the full, I think I did the full 8 movie run for the second time since all the movies were out, like actually watch all of them. I've read the books, I can't tell you how many times, especially the first probably 5, because the rereads between books that was just imperative. It was just the only way to it was the only way to be able to, you know, deal with the anticipation of the next book. And also to sort of pick through. She puts little things in the books, little mentions of characters and references that you think are just sort of passing comments that turn out to be a tiny clue or a little indicator that there's more to something. And so you could go back and go, okay, what if when she said this, she meant this, you know? So yeah, I've read them a lot. That's the short answer. I don't know how many times I've read the books, but a lot.
Absolutely. We're going to touch more on that a little bit later, but producer Hannah's in my ear telling me, because she just has to start beef between me and Adrian. Adrian had issues with one character in particular in the Harry Potter franchise.
Oh, Lord.
I'll let Adrian speak her piece before I just tear into her about it. Adrian, go ahead. What was your problem with it?
Well, here's the thing. This is really my one main point of contention with the whole series. And again, I haven't read the books, so I don't know if my issue would be solved by me reading the books. But Ron is just not a very good character. He just needs to be a better character. This isn't about Rupert Grint. He did the best with what he was given to work with. But, okay, you have, you know, Harry, who's the chosen one and has to, and is kind of forced to go on all these adventures and is forced to become a better wizard. And Hermione, who's apparently just naturally skilled and really smart and brave and everything. And then Ron, who's just not good at anything, as far as we can tell. He's not very brave. He goes on all these adventures, but like complains the whole time and is, you know, like just near pissing himself the entire time.
Okay.
I mean, it's true. He's terrified and makes like these crazy, scared faces every time, pretty much, he goes on one of these adventures, even though nobody's forcing him. You know, he's going willingly. He's not particularly brave. He doesn't seem to be especially smart in general or to have even like really good street smarts. He's, you know, not a really good wizard. He's not even really charming or gregarious or anything.
I gotta cut you off here. I can't tolerate it anymore. Ron Weasley is one of the best characters in the Harry Potter franchise. First off,
how?
I absolutely love him. He's loyal. I think that's the cornerstone of Ron. Ron is very clearly sometimes the voice, I feel, of the audience. Ron kind of portrays how I would feel in those situations. Like, in the real world, we'd all like to say we'd invade a dungeon and do whatever it takes to defeat an evil lord. But I think, deep down, most of us kind of accept that we would be the Ron Weasley in that situation, being like, why am I here? Why am I a part of this? I feel like I have to be a part of it, but this guy's my friend.
No.
I don't know, Kelly. You gotta be the tiebreaker in this. How do you feel about Ron Weasley?
And here's the thing. Okay, wait a minute. Here's the thing. He's not even, like, the coolest person in his family. Everybody in his family is better at everything beside
him. Also balls. Ron is a top three Weasley.
I think there was a huge missed opportunity. Okay, He clearly...
George, and then Ron. Actually, no, I'd put Charlie above George.
No. Dragon. He's the worst. He's the worst in his family.
Okay, hang on. Let Kelly pop in here.
So here's the thing. Adrian's not totally wrong to try to question what the deal is with Ron. But at the same time, I think that he's such a crucial character in Harry's life for so many reasons. For one, because he's a true friend to Harry. And I'm not saying that Hermione isn't, but Ron has, you know, he could go and be with someone, you know, and hang out with someone who isn't going to cast such a big shadow. But he and Harry are kind of peas in a pod. And I think maybe it doesn't come out as much in the movies as it does in the books. But
he saved him from the Dursleys. You know, he broke him out of his house.
He's family. And that's the other thing, is that Ron is Harry's true link to the like closest thing he's ever going to have to a real stable, loving family that can be there for him. And that's the Weasley family. And, you know, Hermione is never super close with, I mean, if she's close with her parents, it doesn't happen on screen. It doesn't happen on in the books all that much. We do get that indicator it was the second to last. The Deathly Hallows Part 1, where she casts the memory charm on her parents and makes them forget her, and she's sort of heartbroken. But that's really, I think, the only time we actually see her parents. So Ron is the family element of the trio. He brings that, and not just because he has a family, but because he's of a family. He understands you know, that you can love someone and be in their shadow at times, and that you can be there for someone and not necessarily get all the credit, and that you can do your part, you know, in with something. And that's what you do when you're with someone that you care about. And that, you know, and Hermione couldn't have brought that. She's not, she does that for her own, you know, because it's in her personality, I think, to be supportive and to be helpful and to do what's right. But Ron's a loyal character, and he brings that, I think, to the group. So I get it in terms of being less, you know, he's more ordinary, you know, and I think Harry would be ordinary if not for so many different factors. And so, yeah.
And I mean, I like him being ordinary. I like us, Mick, as you were saying, us having kind of a view into the world that isn't, you know, filled with bravery and all this kind of stuff, more of a normal person. But I feel like there was a missed opportunity where, because his family, you know, everybody in his family is doing all these cool things. I think he's got a brother who's working with dragons or something. His twin brothers are really, really outgoing, really popular, really, really creative wizards. His sister is really good at wizarding stuff. His parents are just generally good, cool people who accept Harry with no trouble at all. And I think it would have been cool to see Ron go through something where he was invited on one of these adventures or something, and where he would reveal his insecurities and say, you know, I'd love to, I'm really, you know, I want you to succeed and I'm behind you in every way, but I can't go because I don't do that. That's not me. That's not my type of thing. I'm the person who hangs back, you know, and kind of supports you from the sidelines. I feel like that would have had me on his side, even if he had then gone and done something and, you know, been terrified and goofy the whole time. I still would have been on his side because I would have really understood what he was going through. Instead, he's just making funny faces the whole time and terrified. And also, he never gets like a really big heroic moment. Neville,
the Neville's in the Sorcerer's Stone.
Yeah, and Ron destroys one of the Horcruxes by overcoming his own massive insecurities in the last movie, or the second to last. I'm gonna mix up part one and part two because it's weird to me that they're two separate movies. But in Deathly Hallows.
He used the sword to destroy the whatever it was, the locket.
He was carrying the locket. It caused him to kind of cave to all this jealousy and insecurity that he, you know, maybe was trying to be better than in his normal, you know, existence. But wearing a Horcrux, he just sort of fell victim to it. Leaves and then comes back in time to, he dives into the water. Does he do that in the movie? He dives into the water, right? And rescues Harry, who's getting dragged down by the Horcrux. And then he uses a sword. He literally stares at the like physical manifestation of his nightmare, which is Harry and Hermione together and telling him, yep, it's, you know, we're so much better than you. Look at us. We're so much, you know, like he's basically staring at the thing that terrifies him the most, and he conquers it and he destroys it. So, yeah, it's not Nagini. It's not slashing a sword's head off or a snake's head off with a sword. But I thought it was a little bit more. Maybe it doesn't come out as much or isn't as clear as much in the movie as it.
Hashtag Weasley is our king. No. Just throwing that out there.
Never. For no one.
It's just. Plus, let's also just bring up the obvious fact that if Harry and Hermione would have ended up together in the end, it just would have felt all too cheesy. The fact that
Ron and
Hermione end up in the end feels more accurate to me. It feels like that could be a
real thing.
No, it doesn't.
There's no reason for her to like him at all. There's really no reason. I understand why he likes her, but he has done nothing to show her like enough qualities for her to fall for him. That did not happen.
I don't totally agree, and I don't totally disagree with you, Adrian. I never felt like the books spent a lot of time falling characters in love. That just in general, there really wasn't a lot. I liked Harry and Ginny, but like there wasn't a ton of build up to that for me that I was like pining.
Well, yeah, that's
for
another
that,
thing that kind of
you know.
Came out of nowhere because he liked the Chinese Scottish chick first,
Cho Chang.
And then suddenly
put some respect
he's
on her
all
name.
About Ginny. So
that's
the
school,
thing,
though. That's
in
like,
the books. There was a lot more of a buildup I felt in the books versus the films on the Cho Chang and Harry Potter dynamic. I felt like Ginny was just kind of all of a sudden there in the films. And that I will agree with you on that. In terms of romance, it was just kind of, I feel like they were like, here's one film where we're going to have everybody kind of hitting puberty and making out. And then, like, they were like, all right, now everybody has their respective boyfriend.
There was always a jealousy element.
Right.
Like for Ron, it was Hermione goes to the Yule Ball with Victor Krum, and Ron gets jealous, and that sort of flares up the, oh, you know, that might be a thing. And then Ron dates, what's her name, in not Order of the Phoenix, Half-Blood Prince. He dates that. I'm blanking on her name. But
eaten by the werewolf dude. I don't know. I can't remember anybody.
It's not
terrible,
it's not
that I'm blocking.
Yeah, the smaller character.
But anyway, don't worry, the point is that there's always like, then Hermione gets jealous over that. So it's like everything. And then, you know, Ginny dates, she starts dating different guys, and then Harry notices her. So it's almost like that's sort of the device that's used to spark romance.
I feel like that must be in the books, though, because I don't think we see Ginny date anybody in the movies.
Yeah, she dates Michael Corner, she dates Dean Thomas. I'm trying to remember who else.
Doesn't she have a thing with Colin Creevy, like, temporarily? I thought they did. I swear they did.
No idea who you're talking about.
But anyway, I feel like the jealousy factor was always, like, the indicator. Maybe that's just what it was an indicator. Either way, I was never super invested in any of the romances in the story. That was never really it always seemed like an aside, you know? Like, the relationships between the characters was more about their friendships or, you know, the, feuds, depending on.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Also, as a side note, Dobby is basically the Jar Jar Binks of this franchise.
We can touch on that later, but let's first talk about, because I want to get first Adrian's opinion, then Kelly's opinion. I'll start with Kelly first. In your opinion, if you had to make a ranking list, let's just go with what's your top Harry Potter film in the series. In terms of your standard, I would assume, what would you make your standard for the best Harry Potter movie? One that most accurately follows the books? Would it be one just overall entertainment value? Where do you, how does it rank? How do you rank the films on your personal?
I can't do the accurately follows the books thing, because there's just
too much that it doesn't.
Too much, yeah. It's not even worth it. I just have to nitpick. I think it's fine to go through and say these are some major things they changed and not changed, but ranking the movies that way is just too difficult. I would say that Azkaban stands out as the best overall. It's just beautiful to watch, and it really does shift the tone, and it just does a lot of nice things with the story that kind of steps up the standard for the series. So that one, that's where I would start. It's harder to rank after that, but it's easy to say Prisoner of Azkaban is the best of the Harry Potter movies.
Okay, all right, Adrian, which one's your favorite if you had to pick one? Out of your recent viewings,
I'm gonna have to say the final movie, because I think they did a really good job of bringing everything together and explaining everything that needed to be explained. It looked really good. That to me, you know, is a really great looking movie, and the fights are great. The effects are great. I really like the last movie.
See, and I have a hard time with the last movie because of how drawn out and different the ending was from the book. And so it's interesting to me to hear perspective of, like, you're not comparing it to anything, so it's easier for you to have an opinion and not feel like, well, it could have been different, you know, or better.
Yeah. Though I am confused as to why Draco was free when they skip ahead, because he was on Voldemort's side. I don't know why he wasn't in prison.
I think Draco was just the product of a bad family. Like, I don't think Draco was inherently a bad person. He was a douchebag, for sure. But I think in the books they did a better job of showing that Draco was more or less kind of coerced into doing some of the eviler things he did later in life.
Yeah, the Malfoys are a slippery bunch, too. So I feel like the state that they were in at that point, I think that Voldemort sort of, I don't want to say that he was kind of forcing them to help him, but they could make a case that the Death Eaters set up camp in their house and were, you know, holding them hostage in some ways. Like, at least a strong enough case to avoid prison, you know? But it's also family connections and all sorts of other things that they might have. Either way, that they walked away in that final battle showed that they were never really, and I don't even know, well, no, Draco was pretty involved. I was thinking how involved they were in that battle up until that.
They're pretty involved. Yeah, they're pretty involved in it.
And I also don't know why anybody would have let their kids go back to Hogwarts.
Like, that's like the eternal question, literally after every book. Like, the first time somebody was like, what the hell? there's a giant snake in the basement, you figured it would be like a wrap. They'd be like, nobody's coming back until we fix all the weird shit about this school. Like, but that's always the issue with Hogwarts. And I think they do address it. I think in the novels they did mention that, like, parents wouldn't send their kids back after certain incidents and stuff, or they were apprehensive. But, yeah. I'm very surprised, by the way. I just wanted to bring this up. Neither one of you guys mentioned Goblet of Fire. And to me, that's my favorite Harry Potter book and also my favorite film.
Really?
And maybe it's just because... Yeah, absolutely. It's the whole spectacle of the whole tournament, the Triwizard tournament, all that stuff going on.
That's it just, all it is, though. That's what...
It was sad when Robert Pattinson died, and it was weird when Harry Potter took a bath.
It's, to me, Goblet of Fire is the most chopped up ones of all the... I liked the book. That was because after Azkaban, I was totally hooked, and so I couldn't put Goblet of Fire down. And that movie, I just felt like... I remember, like, the beginning where they have the, you know, Quidditch World Cup, and they, like, introduce all the players, and then that's it. Like, every single... It's the most abridged, it feels like, of the... And it was a big book, so I get it, but at the same time...
You are right
it was
about
like,
that.
It's like, task, task, task.
Yeah.
Done. And just, you know, there's almost no context to anything else, and they had to cut away a lot of stuff to get to that ending.
If there really was a movie that you could split into two parts, Goblet of Fire definitely would have been it. Because you could have easily made two movies out of... Well, maybe still could have cut out all of Hermione's work against... the protection of house elves.
Yeah, and no one really was, like, clamoring for Spew to be a part of it. But, yeah. There's...
Oh.
Adrian, you don't know that, like, Hermione... There's a house elf named Winky that Hermione...
Of course there is.
...feels sorry for and kind of takes on the cause to fight for the rights of house elves. Which is a good thing. And it's a reflection of her character. And I like that, but, you know, and Harry and Ron, of course, are just not interested. No one's really taking it seriously. But I mean, that does invite Winky into the story a little bit more. And she was the house elf of Barty Crouch. So, and she was involved in keeping the Barty Crouch Jr. secret. So there was more to the story of her than they just cut that out and didn't even have that in there.
Yeah.
What?
Speaking of which, let's revisit now that it's been brought up, because... I think that kind of brings to the point, Dobby is a big part of the Chamber of Secrets. Like, Dobby is in the book frequently in that part, and he's mentioned a bit throughout. But, Adrian, you think he's the Jar Jar Binks of the Harry Potter universe.
Yeah, I mean, he manages to kind of redeem himself toward the end there, but I was so glad when that movie ended, and the next movie started, and there was no Dobby. I thought for sure Dobby, because I feel like people made a big deal about Dobby when these movies were coming out, so I thought he was a much larger character in the story. I was so glad that there was no Dobby for like 3 or 4 movies. Like, I didn't want to see any more Dobby at all.
That happens a lot in the Harry Potter universe, just to bring that up. Like, Ferenc, the centaur in the forest, he, like, introduces himself. He goes all that trouble introducing himself to Harry Potter in the first book. And then, like, the guy never is seen again. Like, you think, like, all right, this is some dude who's going to be relevant later on. Not really a big character, just to bring that on. But, yeah, no, I can't believe that you had so much hate for Dobby. I've always had a soft spot in my heart for Dobby. Kelly,
of
I don't know how you feel
if you
about
you like
him.
Ron.
Yeah, I get the point for the movies. And even in the books, Dobby's a character you come to, like, love later on, I think. A little bit more. Well, obviously, he introduces himself as kind of a nuisance. He's, like, trying to keep Harry from going to Hogwarts. He's not fully explaining himself. So, you know, he's doing all these bad things. So he doesn't really get the best introduction in terms of lovability. But he does love Harry. And he would do anything for Harry. And he's there for Harry. And I feel like the house elves, you know, Hermione has a point. You know, they get a raw deal. They're treated really crappily. And there's also Creature, who is in the book, in the movies, right?
Yeah,
He's another house elf. You get to see, like, this is an example of what the Wizarding World continues to be, that these beings are still being treated like, you know, like nothing, and it's affected them in some way. So Dobby stands out because he wasn't treated well, but he was still good to the core, you know, and he for whatever the reason, fights against this idea that anyone can own him, you know, and he's always there for Harry, and he's there till the very end. And it's the saddest thing when he goes. And I think that's his overall story is what people love so much about him, is everything that he was to Harry, even if he wasn't always around.
Such a great...
I don't want to talk about Dobby.
Such a great response, which transitions us to our interview segment. Miss Kelly, you are going to be answering some of the bigger questions regarding the future of the Harry Potter universe, other random things that we had for you on this podcast. Starting off with the first thing, what is something that Harry Potter fans can be excited about right now?
So, there's, I think, a lot of things that Harry Potter... I mean, not just the fact that now we have all 8 movies on HBO that we can watch commercial-free. There's some small things. I don't want to say small, but like each year for the last couple of years, we've gotten an illustrated edition of the books. This year should be, if everything goes on schedule, Goblet of Fire, I would say in October, but I don't know that that's been officially announced, just that Azkaban came out last October. There is Cursed Child, Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, the play will be coming to Broadway this spring, which is a big deal. They're actually doing up the Lyric Theater specifically for this production, so that should be really exciting to anyone who can actually get tickets. I think more tickets are going to be coming out or made available soon, but the registration process did not go well for me the last time, so I'm not going to get my hopes up.
Womp womp.
And then we have Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald, which comes out this November. It's true. It was a very womp womp thing. Very, very sad attempt to try to get tickets. I got really lucky in the registration process for Cursed Child in that when it was open in London, in that I got like a really good spot and got tickets to one of the first few weeks of its showing, and it was still in previews. And so in my mind, I thought, well, of course I'll be lucky again. Not at all. No luck at all. I registered for tickets and then got the thing that basically says you did not, like, you're not one of the lucky people that got a registration number. So I didn't even get a chance to actually buy tickets.
On that note, I've never read the Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. Haven't jumped into it yet, even though I'm a Harry Potter fan. Have you read it?
Yes. Don't read it. If you're going to see it, and if not...
Well, it's damn.
It's a play. And no, well, I've seen the mixed reactions to it. And now here's the thing. Again, I did not read it before I saw it. There was no book out when I saw it, because they didn't release the book until after the play officially opened, which was a couple weeks later. It's a play. J.K. Rowling takes a lot in her... She did not actually write the script. I think she worked on the story with it and helped develop it. But when she writes her books, she goes in depth. She drops those little pieces of information, those little references that build up to something. And so it all feel like it connects and it makes sense. And she does that so well. That's what's so good about the Harry Potter books. And when you read a play, I think you're going to get dialogue and a little bit of stage direction, but you're not really going to get... I had so many questions even after seeing the play. But I will say this, the play was great. Seeing it in the theater, I got chills during moments. They do some incredible special effects and some magical spells that happen on stage that I was staring at the stage. I'm sitting like toward the back and trying to see on the stage, how are they doing this? Like, how are they? It was just so exciting to see them, you know, to see how they made these spells come to life. But just on dialogue alone, and even just after I saw the play, I had questions that I felt were unanswered about things that happened in the play that I know if she had written this as a book, there would have been an explanation. There's no way that we would have been left wondering, why did this happen this way, or how come this, you know, I thought the rule was this and now this. Like, I don't want to get into specifics or spoilers. So I will say that a large part of my enjoyment of Cursed Child was the experience of seeing it, and I would recommend to people that they, you know, if they can see it in the theater, especially when it's coming to the Lyric and you can see it in New York, if you can get tickets, I think that would be an awesome experience for any Harry Potter fan.
Okay, just catch me up really quickly. I don't know what the Cursed Child is about. I know that it's a thing, but that's all I know. What does it cover?
So, well, you know, there's a child who's cursed.
The last Harry Potter movie ends 19 years later. Cursed Child picks up right at that spot and focuses on Harry and Ginny's second child, who's going off to Hogwarts, and he's the sort of living in the shadow of being, you know, Harry Potter's son and making the right kind of friends and some other things. So it's a sequel, a very later sequel. And Harry, Ron, and Hermione do return for it in their later adult years. So they're, I guess, in their late 30s, early 40s, as the story goes through, Harry's son. And Ginny and Ron have a daughter.
So one thing that stuck out to me about you watching The Cursed Child, you said you were amazed by what was going on stage and stuff, which I feel like is saying something for you, because you've been on the set of a Harry Potter film. You were on the set of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. How was that?
Oh, so cool. It was really exciting for me. I never got to go on any of the sets of the Harry Potter movies, so to be able to step into the magical Harry Potter universe in some form or another was a huge deal for me. And so that was really cool. They had, this was for the first movie. I didn't do a set visit for the second movie, but this was in Leavesden in the UK, where they have the studio tour. That's also where they film parts of the movies, and I think most of the movies. I know they had some Liverpool locations for the first movie, but I guess we got to see like the streets of New York in the 1920s. And we got to see the set that they had for the MACUSA building, which was awesome. The inside, the outside is the Woolworth building in New York City. So obviously we did not see that. But inside we got to see parts of the actual office where the U.S. version of the Ministry of Magic operates, and meet some of the cast and talk about the movie. And they couldn't really tell us a ton, obviously. But, you know. See the wands.
Still rad, though. Yeah, the wands.
Yeah, that
That's
was really
cool.
Part.
Everybody's wand. It's like having a different lightsaber, I guess. Yeah. Exactly like that. But moving on, I wanted to ask you this question earlier. We didn't have time to it. But now we're here so we can talk about it. As someone who loves the books and you've seen all the portrayals of all the actors portraying characters, who do you think does the best job portraying a character as they are portrayed in the book? Which actor or actress?
Yeah. I love the Richard Harris Dumbledore. I think, I guess that's the immediate. I want to say that, like, Maggie Smith as Minerva McGonagall is brilliant also. And a lot of, not to say that the other casting isn't great, you know, but Richard Harris is the original Dumbledore. He was just this perfect, you know.
You're right.
Just brings
You're
it
right.
to life.
There is, and it is a really strong cast. I mean, like, Alan Rickman is Severus Snape. When I remember seeing him feel that, I was like, unquestionably, that's exactly how I imagined him, kind of thing. But as you said, there's just so much good casting. Other questions to ask. Is there anyone you thought did a particularly bad job? Was there anyone you ever saw where you're like, not exactly how I thought that character should be?
No, I mean, not really. It was an adjustment, switching Dumbledores, unfortunately, when Richard Harris passed away. I think he died in 2002. So that's always weird. I feel like it's hard to, you know.
Did you pick up on the Dumbledore switch, by the way, Adrian?
I knew that it was a thing that happened, but I did not really, it didn't make any difference to me.
Okay.
Yeah. So I knew it happened, but it wasn't a big deal. They seemed to be basically the same portrayal. You know, it didn't seem like there was a big difference between those two to me.
Oh, I totally disagree. I totally disagree. I like Michael Gambon, most cases. I mean, I think people complain a lot, and I get it, about the, like, when he, like, grabs Harry and Goblet of Fire, and he's like, did you put your name in it? Like, that you're not supposed to, no, he's supposed to say it calmly. Dumbledore was calm. Like, he wasn't mad at Harry. There were times when there were bursts of energy from Gambon's performance that didn't seem, like, on track. But then there were moments of those, like, playful moments that I liked from Gambon's performance. It was just different from Richard Harris, and I think once you sort of lock in that, like, imagine if any of the other actors, I want to say, was it Crabbe or Goyle? One of Malfoy's friends gets cast differently in the later movies.
I think so, yes.
But, I mean, that's not super noticeable, you know, by comparison to, like, a main character like Albus Dumbledore, or if it were Snape or Lupin, or, you know, one of the other leads, that you would be like, whoa, you know, you have to really adjust your thinking when you're watching them and stop trying to compare them to the other person.
If there was one moment from the books that you wish, if you could go back in a perfect world and say, like, make sure the scene's in there, is there a certain scene in particular that you'd be like, this should have been in the films?
Well, they cut out a lot of the backstory, and this will be interesting to, you know, as it relates to Fantastic Beasts, that one of the big things that Harry didn't learn or didn't know about Dumbledore until after Dumbledore dies is the friendship that Dumbledore had with Gellert Grindelwald when they were younger, and how he, you know, they had some ideas. They had some ideas when they were young about, well, wizard superiority and dominance over humans. And Dumbledore had his own reasons for that. And I think it comes through in the books and in the movies. They barely touch on it. You don't really get a sense of what happened to Ariana, his sister, or, you know, why, I don't know, the relevance of Gellert Grindelwald, which he's in the movie because Voldemort finds him and takes the wand from him. Or not takes the wand, but, like, kills him because he doesn't have the wand. And that's such a huge, it's such like a little footnote in the movies, the original movies, because the books go into it and Harry has that conversation at the end with Dumbledore, and Dumbledore admits that like he was always afraid, he avoided Grindelwald because he was always afraid that he knew which one of them had cast a spell that killed his sister. And I feel like that's going to be so relevant in these, I'm hoping that it's relevant in these Fantastic Beasts movies, that we get more of that story. But so I would say, like, as a big story arcs, that would be it for, I wish that we had gotten more of that. There just wasn't time in Deathly Hallows. For small ones, I think there is a deleted scene, and it's a moment with Petunia Dursley, where you get a sense, she's standing in the room, and I think it's when they were leaving Privet Drive, and she's standing in the room, and you get a sense, for the first and really only time, that she loved her sister so much, and was sort of, you know, devastated over her loss and has not really voiced that very much, especially not to Harry. And we get just this little smidge of it, and it's this lovely, lovely moment that didn't make it into the final cut of the movie, and that was a loss. It's those moments. Even if I don't remember that direct, well, I think there was an exchange between Harry and Petunia when they were saying goodbye. But
it wasn't as emotional as it was in the books.
Yeah, and those little moments are what makes the book so good, is understanding that these are people that have been living with these great tragedies, and not all of them have dealt with them in, you know, the best way. And I don't know, it's those things where I feel like I wish there would have been more time in the movies to explore that, so you could understand that the reason for all of this is because these characters mean what they mean to each other, for better or worse.
Absolutely. All right, well, that's a good place to transition to our game. Now, Adrian's kind of warned me beforehand. She may not be the best at this. The game title is called Aloha What Now? Like Aloha Mora? You guys give it on... whatever. Doesn't matter. Kelly and Adrian, I'm going to be giving you the names of some Harry Potter spells, along with some things that they possibly could be doing, and you're going to have to tell me what they do. All right, here we go. Question number one. Confringo. Is that an explosion or burning spell? A spell that allows for underwater breathing, or a love charm?
Underwater breathing.
I'm going to go with the first one.
Kelly's right. It is the first one. It is used on, I believe, in an attempt to kill Voldemort's snake in the last film. Kind of, it misses. It kind of just barely grazes. Number two, Mos Mordre. Is that a spell used to clean shoes, cause a sense of unease, or create the dark mark? I'll say it again. A spell used to clean shoes.
Uh-huh.
A spell used to cause a sense of unease, or to create the dark mark.
Okay, now say the actual spell's name or whatever.
Mos Mordre.
Or Fingo or whatever. What
Mos
is it?
Mordre.
I'll pick the last one.
Adrian is 100% right. It's the dark mark.
Yep, it's the dark mark for sure. No, I knew Kelly was going to get that one right. All right. Slugulus Eructo. Is this a spell that makes the food someone eats taste like slugs, makes someone feel sluggish, or makes someone vomit slugs?
Vomit slugs?
I want to say vomit slugs from Chamber of Secrets, but I also feel like, doesn't Ron want Malfoy to eat slugs? I'm overthinking this.
I'm going to say this, you're both right. And yes, you are correct, Kelly. In the films, Ron tries to count a mental spell by saying eat slugs. However, the proper name for the slug is Erectus Sluggo, which causes it to backfire because of his broken wand, and then Ron ends up vomiting slugs.
Okay.
So he does the whole thing wrong. Last one, Langlock. This is a spell that glues the tongue to the roof of your mouth. It locks your jaw shut or tightens the vocal cords and makes them sound, makes their voice have like a higher pitch than what it usually does.
Say the spell again.
Langlock.
Tightens the vocal cords. That's what I'm picking.
Mm. And what were the other two options?
It glues the tongue to the roof of your mouth or locks your jaw shut.
I'm going to go with locks your jaw shut.
it gets your tongue stuck to the top of your mouth. Wrong. And apparently that was one used on Draco Malfoy in The Half-Blood Prince, but I believe that was a novelization one, so... That was pretty good. You guys did a lot better than I thought you would.
Thanks.
Really? I did?
I mean, whatever. That's fine.
I got
you
one
did,
right.
Adrian, you did exactly as well as I expected you to. Thank I did you. Not expect this to go well for you.
I fulfilled expectations.
All right, so we're at the end of things. Kelly, if you have anything to plug, now would be the time to do it. Anything Cinema Blend related with Harry Potter that you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, Cinema Blend has a Facebook page called Potter Blend that you can follow. And we drop links in there and share other Harry Potter related funness. So if you're specifically interested in Harry Potter updates, keep an eye on that Facebook page. And that's it.
Awesome. Well, Potter thanks Blend. For popping on the podcast. You can follow the podcast, by the way, on Twitter at CordcutterPod. I saw we got a new follower a couple days ago. I've been following it avidly.
Yes.
Yeah, every victory is great for us. So leave us a review on iTunes. It helps us out, helps grow the podcast, helps so many great things happen. Tune in for us next week. We're going to be covering what's happening with Marvel in 2018. Until next time, guys, TV is overrated. Keep on cord cutting.